We'll call this meeting to order. Other people can join us. Jen, they know how to reach us? Or
yep. The meeting ID and password was published, and I'm keeping my eye on the waiting room.
Okay. So it being 5 o'clock, I will open the call to order the regular scheduled meeting of the Kootenai Water Commission, a historic first to be broadcast over Zoom in a virtual setting instead of good old friendly confines of Freedom Hall. Mark Robinson, chair, with Commissioners Horsley and Hoppenstadt, joined by staff Jennifer Nash and Chris Wiseman, superintendent. We have a fairly short agenda, I think, some important items. I would like to just thank the staff again for during this important period and to its history for being so responsive to a lot of different things that are coming at them that are a little bit out of whack, in addition to the normal things of this month, instituting the Flushing program that we do annually. And I know we've been trying to put out more information about what residents need to do. We've always put that information out before, but it's just, I think it's making sure that people just know not just that the flushing is going on, but also that the when it's affecting their neighborhood, measures that they might want to take. And we always have more information available through the office about it. If flushing is coming to your neighborhood. We have Carol.
Hello,
hi,
there.
Carol. And we may have other people coming in. I don't have my agenda right in front of me, but we typically ask for public comment. I will ask for public comment to begin with here, and then we'll also have an opportunity later if more people join us. Is there any public comment for the Water Commission at this point? Carol?
Hi, yeah, Carol Zace. I just wanted to ask you guys if you could explain at some point, again, for the community and me, the effects of the increase in the water rate to our 2021 fiscal year fire district budget again. I just think this will be an important information for the villagers and the people at the district meeting to have. So I know you guys have done an amazing job explaining that all along the way when you were doing the rate increases. But I just think, I know I could use a review on it, so I always think that there's others that could too. And it's a topic that I'm hearing. When does that kick in? When should we see it in the overall town budget, or will we not ever see it there? That's all.
So I don't want to get into a lot of this in detail now again.
Just for the future.
Many meetings and we've actually had a hearing where the entire thing was filmed and recorded, and it's on our website. In general, we had an exhaustive study done by a consultant working for the commission and the department, which analyzed the true costs of delivering water for residential use as opposed to fire protection, and we've tried to make the water generating its own revenue, basically, to support the operations. With the increase, which is a graduated increase, so that heavy users of water will pay at a higher rate for the extra volumes that they use above the base rates, we hope to encourage conservation, but we also want to people to pay for the water that they're using, basically. And one of the things we'll be talking about tonight is an irrigation policy. I will not ask for a vote on that tonight. I want to do it in a public session. We have more people that can attend in person. But I did want to go over that in more detail tonight. So I think that's part of this whole water rate, water conservation program that we've instituted. The main thing that we've been trying to educate the ratepayers about is how there is an intersection between the water rates and the revenue generated thereby, and the corresponding decrease in the subsidy provided by district taxes. So it's really up to the Prudential Committee working on the district budget to allocate and coordinate that intersection between the revenues, which are the water revenues this year are much higher, as you would expect,
right,
because of the rate increase. And this will be sort of a shakeout year. It's the first year people are experiencing this dramatic increase in heavy use of water. There's very little impact, really, on people who use very, very little water. My household is small. We don't irrigate, and I've seen virtually no impact in my bill. But we do know that there are people with large lawns that irrigate a lot that are paying a lot more than they used to this year. So that may encourage them in the second year of this program to cut back on that somewhat or to institute things like rain sensors and other techniques that can help. So I'd ask the other commissioners if they'd like to respond briefly to this question.
Yeah, I think it comes down to the fact that, like you mentioned, there's the intersection between taxes, property taxes, and the water rates, and we really won't see a change until 2021, which is what you mentioned, Carol. So I think that people recognize that there's a year delay, but at that point, the town will or should change its tax base or the amount of money they levy on people's property taxes for the district. And correspondingly, then the taxes you pay it for properties to the town of Barnstable will go down.
The district tax.
Yeah.
Probably going to be for fiscal year 2022, not this coming fiscal year, 2021.
No, it should be for 2021.
It should be, okay.
Because we instituted the new fees in fiscal year 2020.
The revenues are in, okay? So I think it's really up to the Prudential Committee and maybe best taken up with them at this point.
Okay.
Are there other public comments? Okay. I'm a little bit lost here. I don't have any papers in front of me. Can you post the agenda?
Raise it up just a little
raise
bit.
It up.
Raise it up, Chris.
What do we got? We got
the next on the agenda is the
superintendent's report. Good man, Chris.
Yeah, no problem. I could probably take a picture and send it to you if you need. All right, guys. This is the April report. Pumpage in March of 2019 was $7,340,000. And pumpage for 2020 March is $7,112,000 for a decrease of $518,000. So just about $100 million less than last year. Not too concerned about that. I think people are actually might get the idea that water was a little more. We told people to start using less. It's been a little wet. I like to see the pumpage go down right now, not up. So I'm pretty good there. I think we will see an increase next month because we have started flushing. It should be a little more, I'd say around the same, but at least the pumpage itself is going to be up. I don't know about the percentage-wise with all the bills that went out. And the people that were calling Jen up and asking why they were up, I think you'll see the pumpage comparison be down still. We didn't have any new services done in March, no replacement services. Talked about the tank cleaning last month that was scheduled to be done second week of April. They called me and canceled. They were having trouble keeping staff with everything going on. He said he's going to call to reschedule it. I'm going to have to wait to do the clean out on Santuit till probably fall, but they can come and do the power wash at any point because that won't be affecting water consumption at all. This is for you, Mark, too. I neglected to tell you, you had a question last month on 671 Main Street. We have some test wells out there to check the quality of the water, and you asked if this was a reimbursable bill. It was for a year that was in the contract. Right now, they've agreed to still pay us for the actual tests that are done and a handling fee. So we still pay the excess for the reports and the comparison reports of the months before. They end up paying probably roughly around $650, I think it is, depending on the price of the samples. So they just pay for the samples that are being done. We pay for the engineering services.
Can you explain what those tests are trying to study?
It's basically to see, make sure it's not harming station 3, VOCs, nitrates, different contaminants from the septic system that they put in to make sure there's nothing traveling to station 3, which they're quite close to the zone 1 on. So that's why originally we had put in the contract for them to pay for the tests, but the contract was only with two owners ago, and it got carried on, and it only was for a year's worth of tests. So if we wanted it any further, we have to keep it going ourselves. We signed a five-year contract to have it done, and they nicely have said, yes, we will still keep paying for the prices of the tests themselves.
So maybe Commissioner Horsley can talk about travel time and whether 1 year's worth of travel time is going to make a difference. How far are the wells from the septic, the monitoring wells, Chris, do you know?
From the zone 1, they're about, I think it's 200 feet from the 150. I believe he could probably find the original report that was done for the town of Barnstable, who originally did that work, to say what the travel time of my head, but I could look it up and find the actual time, because I believe I remember the firm that did the test for the town of Barnstable and the report. I might have it at the office.
Just a quick comment. Generally speaking, we use a rate of 1 foot per day, but if you're in a close to a pumping well within the cone of depression, which we probably are here, the speed of the water, the velocity, groundwater, increases geometrically as you get closer to the well. So it would require some modeling, not necessarily anything too elaborate, but there are some ways to calculate this, but it's probably going to be a lot faster than the 1 foot per day as you get closer and closer to the well. So it's something that's hard to estimate without kind of going through those calculations. It's obviously going to vary, too, on the more you pump the well, the greater the drawdown, the greater the slope of the water table, and the faster it flows.
I guess the question is, have we tested it for enough years to have intercepted the leachate from that septic system?
How far away? 100 feet?
Yeah, it's the property itself touches the backside of zone 2. We actually have zone 1, excuse me. We have a perpetual easement there where they don't build on it. They're not in the absolute opposite side of the almost on the main street is where the septic system is there, all in the front yard. I think it's an amphidrome system. We right now are monitoring it quarterly to make sure we have a deep well and a shallow well. So we're doing the suggestions of the firm originally on that.
Yeah, my guess is it would be 30 days or less if it's that close and within the cone of depression. I mean, normally it would be more like 200 days, a foot per day, but given that we're in the drawdown area, it could be weeks or a month or so, but definitely within the time frame of the testing.
Great. Thank you, Chris.
Tom? Here, can I ask what they're monitoring for, particularly? Like, what are chemicals that they're looking for in those wells? Are they doing nitrates, phosphates?
Correct. They're doing all nitrate, phosphates. They're doing anything that has wastewater products on it in it. They're doing BODs, you know, everything that's there. I can get you a full report on it if you want to take a peek at it to take a look for the future.
Great. I'd like that.
Yep. Any more on 671 Main?
I'd like to go back to the tank cleaning.
Okay.
So they canceled on us.
Yep.
Did they give us another date?
He said he would be calling me back to give me a better date on that, because he wasn't sure. He had a lot of problem keeping a crew together right now.
Yeah.
They're following all the guidelines too, where they're not throwing so many people in a truck, I believe, and they'll all have to come down in their own vehicle, and they got to go up in a lift with two guys on the lift. So I don't know what they have to wear for PPE and everything else. So I can give him a little more of a discussion. I actually expect to hear from him this week. I kind of thought he would give me a call last week, but I said, well, he's probably just going to go now. I can give them another call and ask if there's a little more. We will be having Station 5 pulled at the end of next week, I believe, to we have a vibration in it. We wanted to get it done when we got to a certain point in Flushing where we weren't going to need Station 5 to clean the north side of town here. And we've worked it out where we're done with that side now, so we can use just the tanks themselves to clean that area. And we're going to be pulling that next week, and they're going to be yanking that out of the ground to see what's causing the vibration that's in it. It's been there for years. They say it's residential harmonics, but everything out of balance eventually. About every 10 years, we have to pull it and straighten things back out again. So that will be pulled next week and be out of commission probably for about a week, if not more. It depends on what has to be done for repairs.
Okay. I for one would like to see that that tank cleaning be prioritized.
Okay.
Well, we set a goal of having it done before the summer.
I thought it was before the boating season.
Okay.
The boating season a little earlier this year.
Yep.
Yeah.
How about lilac season?
Okay.
Just making a note here, sorry.
Thanks.
And to go with that a little more about the Flushing, we have started Flushing, of course, as you guys know. We've done the complete, everything north of Route 28's been done. He finished that off yesterday, and we're starting on the south side now of 28. We did a couple small areas just in the end, and now we're starting in the well field coming out. We only had a couple complaints as of yesterday, I think it was. We had a little bit of dirty water. I don't believe it was our fault yesterday. I believe the fire department was out doing some training on the other end of town, not really realizing that we were flushing. So it turned up a little bit in town. So I gave them a call, and they're going to hold off on any training till we're done flushing for now. I was going to say that was it, and we were doing great. But the reason I just made it into this meeting before is because I was on the phone with somebody over on Cornwall Court who is a repeat offender, we'll say, of dirty water. And she has had it since noontime today, and it's still not clear. As I was talking to you, my phone just went off, and it was a friend of mine over off of Putnam Ave that has dirty water right now. So apparently with what we did today, it really shook up a little bit on that side of town also. So
I had four calls today on that.
Four? Okay. So it seems to be, for us to get out of the well field, it's drawing from other areas further away. And I don't know if it's because the tanks are further away and we're not pumping wells on. It's going to be, this is the first year that I'm noticing further and further out we're starting to get some calls. Maybe it's something we're going to have to do twice a year. I don't know, but we're going to see how this goes. I did tell the lady if she still has it tomorrow, I've talked to her about going over and possibly seeing if there's another way we can relieve the problem over there. The last thing I have on my report is the security update. We're just about done. All the stations are on now. It's more of a cleanup stuff, yeah, with the security project. I did get a call today with an update saying everything was going. It's more of coming down and checking, make sure all the other work was being done properly. I know we're not going to talk tonight about the GHD amendment bill or anything like that. It's not on the agenda, but I would like to have a meeting later on if we can. The engineers getting pressure from New York or something to see what's going on. So if we could get together at some point, I can discuss with Mark or anybody about possibly meeting just for a half an hour or so one night just to talk about it. Other than that, that's what I have. Any questions?
Any questions from the commissioners?
What's the pushback from GHD Engineering from New York? What are they looking for? Clarify that for me, please.
The amendment that I had given you last month to look at, they're wondering why they're not billing right now, because they're basically at the end of their contract, the end of their original contract. So they were looking for the amendment. Why is there no billable hours going out and stuff like that? And why are you still working if you're not getting paid to them? Because I held a bill for about a month. Or to maybe two.
So this is really to address the overrun on the contract.
Correct.
Their position is that it's within the contingency factor, but it's a big amount. The contingency was very high.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so we did have one presentation. It was a little bit off the cuff, I thought, from.
Russ.
And so, yes, we can have him come back. I'd rather do it in a public setting rather than like this. I don't know when we can do that.
All right. I'll just let you know, too. Russ did approach me with an original amendment that was quite higher than the one that I handed you guys. I told him that wasn't – he said – he actually went back and said, that's not going to fly. I can do it. I'm going to tell you right now, you'll never see him again. So that is the – you guys never had the original amendment that was handed to him. He had him restructure it, and that's actually quite lower than what the original was put out at. I'll let you know that too.
I think we could maybe set a meeting date. I don't know what the other commissioners feel on that, but –
Well, I would like a memo explaining the original bid, why the contingency was so high. It's almost like they building it in purpose to me. I do consulting work. It's small potatoes compared to this kind of a contract, but and things always come up that you don't foresee. And it seems to me that they're, if it's a learning curve, that's not stuff that we're supposed to be paying for. Now, I understand that you said it was having to do with some of the inadequacy of our plans. And
yeah, some of the stuff was based on, and without getting into it too much, our previous 2 to 3, I mean, this was originally invented by a former commissioner, had 3 different engineers help them throughout the time that we had it, 2 different integrators. There was never a proper, every time an integrator came in and made a change, it didn't get put into the books or into the anything that we owned. Put it that way. So when they came down thinking that we had plans on everything, we had nothing, basically. We had hand drawing things from a commissioner, and the one firm that was refused to give them anything on it. Kind of held us at hostage because we didn't own anything. So that basically goes from there. But we can get into that once we start talking. I don't want to get this going all night either.
Okay. Well, we'll handle it separately then. Do you have anything else, Chris?
No, I nothing on that.
Okay. One thing I just wanted to mention, speaking of security, I know it's a different type of security, but is there any way we can drop one more boulder at the end of Sampson Mill Road? Is that one place where the trucks can still get in?
Down. I can probably move one from one spot to another. I just had them re-put the gate in there.
Right, but there's a place where the two boulders are this far apart, just enough for the truck to squeeze through. If you could move a boulder just even like
that. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll see if I can get a machine over there. And see if I can get them to push it over at least. Okay.
And if the guys go down to check on, is it number two that has the mattress in front of it?
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things we got to get rid of. I was hoping when the we had a complaint down there, and I was hoping to get the people caught by we had the police department down there, and we had a couple, three gentlemen down there shooting down the range, and they were shooting that mattress. So I was hoping
I came by your office today. You showed me the video.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was hoping to get them to pay for that removal, but it's going to have to be us to get rid of it. We have money in there to get that stuff out of there.
But it's just that if we can just, I think that's the only place that they can still get in.
Yeah.
Between those two boulders.
I don't know where you come down to the sand pit by the new cell tower, if that has been opened up in there enough to get a vehicle through. I don't know.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Okay, what's next on our agenda?
Irrigation policy.
Okay, so just a little background that while we were doing the water rate study and the implementing the bylaw and the rate structure, we identified the fact that a lot of the high water use is related to irrigation, lawn irrigation of private homes primarily. And Commissioner Horsley has done some research that we want to ask him to present tonight. And he's drafted a bylaw that is based on some similar bylaws elsewhere, I think. And I know, Scott, you've also done some more research with private well installers and irrigation companies. And so I just wanted to have you give us an update. And I would like to have, again, more of a public process where we can have people in a room ask questions. I just think this is a terrible way to be transparent about things. So. Not everybody has this technology, so that's part of it. Scott?
Okay. So I will just briefly walk you through the proposed regulation and then also give you a very quick summary of a phone call I had with some irrigation technology people recently, and I did provide parts of an email record of notes from that. I won't go through in detail tonight, but certainly we can in the future. So just walking through the regulation first, as Commissioner Robinson mentioned, there are other water departments and districts that do have similar irrigation policies and regulations, notably Mashpee, not too far away. I did find out that our enabling laws, specifically Article 9 of the bylaws of the Cotuit Fire District, do empower and enable the water department to pass regulations. So I drafted this as a regulation as opposed to a policy, which I think just gives it a little more strength if we need that. And basically, the regulation provides some background as to why we might want to do this, and that includes the fact that we're pumping close to capacity during the summer. It's my estimation that close to half of the summer pumping is related to irrigation. I think it's pretty clear that we're having drawdown effects on the Little River. And I also have mentioned that I think there's a chance that our iron and manganese issues may be associated with that dry down the river and the associated wetlands that contribute iron and manganese. And the implication of that relates to a report we have that before us that proposes something close to $10 million future treatment costs related to iron and manganese. So for all of those reasons, I think it's a good idea for us to reduce pumping during the peak season. And the best way to do that, I think, is to look at the lawn irrigation. And as I frequently remind people, this is a public drinking water supply. It is not a public irrigation supply. So that I view that as sort of a secondary use. In any case, what the regulation does, and this is partly modeled after Mashpee, but it does go a step further, and I'll try to clarify that. There's really just three or four provisions. So the first one is department will not allow any new automatic irrigation system to be connected to the system. I should also mention during the recent call with the irrigation people, Jen provided some great data on how many irrigation systems we might have currently. And the irrigation specialists I talked to suggested that about 95% of these existing systems do not have current smart water-saving controls in them. So there is some opportunity to reduce demand by improving the technology. But nonetheless, the first provision in the regulation would be to essentially not allow any new systems to be brought onto the public system, but rather, if people want to put those in, go to a private on-lot well. The second provision is that existing conditions that have existing automatic irrigation systems may continue to use them, but that they have to install what I'll just refer to tonight as smart controls. And these are things like rain sensors, weather report technologies and controllers, and low flow heads that are mentioned in the regulation. So it essentially would require that 95% of the existing systems to be upgraded. And the people that I talked to, again, in the irrigation business felt that there was, plenty of affordable technology that could be applied there. Now, the third provision of the proposed regulations that I wrote, and this is the one that goes beyond the Mashpee regulation. What this says is, as of 2023, 3 years from now, all automatic irrigations must be disconnected from the public system and replaced with a private on-lot well. I'll come back to that because some of that relates to how much benefit we might get from some of these new smart controls. The regulations then go on to talk about people who use hoses and sprinklers periodically to try to do that more carefully. And then it provides some fines and enforcement. And the fines in here are $250 for first offense, $500 third and subsequent, et cetera. That's essentially a quick overview of the regulations. So again, three primary provisions. One is no new systems. Second one, if you do have a system now, you have to upgrade it to smart controls. And the third one would be to have a sunset date, and I propose 3 years, when we try to move these systems off the public drinking water supply. So that's the regulation. I was contacted by a couple of these irrigation technology people. We had a very good call and a couple emails. And I'll try to summarize that in my words, but again, I did provide their specific comments as well to you, and we can go dig into that perhaps more detailed in the future. But generally speaking, what I recall is, as I've already said, most of the irrigation systems, they estimate 95% of them that we have in Kitsuit, are not smart. They're old technology. They could be upgraded. I asked them, if we do that, how much water do we save? And the number that they gave me was about 30%, 33%, about a third, if we upgrade. They also indicated that there was a qualification with that, that they said you get about a 33% savings if they're operated properly. So I said, well, what do you mean by that? And they said, well, it's not uncommon that customers put these in and A, don't know how to use them properly, or B, disconnect them or parts of them after time. So, and that's a really hard thing to control. So my take home from that is I don't think we'll get 30 or 33%. I would guess we might get half of that, maybe 15 or 16%, because people are people. And that's going to be a really hard thing to police. The other recommendation that came from the irrigation people was why not go after the big systems first? And again, Jen provided us with some good data on that. And they suggested why not try to tackle the big guys first and try to get them with the smart controls and or off the public system. I think that makes sense. But thinking back to the original reason to do this, I think the idea is to try to reduce the summer peak pumping. And if roughly 40 or 50% is irrigation, and if everything is replaced with new technology, we might get a third of that. And you start doing the numbers, and I guess my take is I think doing this, implementing these technologies and keeping them online will help somewhat. But my guess is overall we might see a 10%, 15% water savings overall. That's just a guess based upon our conversation. I don't think we're going to see a 30 or 40% reduction in peak pumping because of the things that I've outlined. So I'm not sure that's going to be enough, but it certainly would be a start. So that's a quick overview of the proposed reg and my conversation with the irrigation people. I think I'll just stop there and see if people have questions now. And again, we can certainly go through this in a lot more detail at a future meeting.
Thank you, Scott. So I think that a couple things. One is that, again, I think this is a transition year as we have people react and respond to the rate increases. And I think with the very highly graduated rate structure, these top 10 users perhaps, maybe it's just a cost of doing business they don't even see. But I think that we need a good year or two of data to see how much reduction in use, seasonally adjusted, that we see because of the increase in price, and just that itself might be a break on some of this. My thought was that rather than force everybody off the public water supply for irrigation, we could raise the rate even higher for the top users, people over 1 million gallons or 800,000, whatever the number is, to make it a big disincentive to really use that much volume. Find out over a 3-year period who were the top 10-20% of the users and force those people off the public water supply. I don't think it's really fair for people who have invested in an expensive system, and they're using it sparingly. They're very conscious about it. I don't think it's fair to kick them off the system and make them put in a well. They may be far away from any of these wetlands that we're talking about, but I think the fact that we're in a transition period might mean slowing down on kicking people off the system. But I think all the other provisions make a lot of sense. I don't think there should be new systems added to it. That's just exacerbating the problem. So my initial take. Tom?
Well, first of all, I think I'd like to hear from Superintendent Wiseman about his feeling on whether or not we're going to see a big decrease in water pumping if we did steps 1 and 2, where we would have no new systems and then installation of the smart devices. I like those provisions. I totally agree with Commissioner Robinson on that. Because we are in a transition year, we might want to wait at least until peak pumping season this year to see just how much of a reduction we get due to the new fee structure. I think that's something that we kind of have to do. I totally understand where Scott is coming from with regards to Commissioner Horsley, with regards to the 2023, get people motivated of the domestic supply, because it's drinking water. But the whole, I guess, I don't know. Let me hear what Chris has to say.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Mark said too there, that I think you're going to see a decrease already. That's what I was trying to say a little earlier with the price increases. I think you're going to see a little decrease already. I think people are going to actually check to make sure that they're either running themselves or start looking into the smart system a little more. I do think that these measures would definitely bring down consumption. I'm not sure of the percentages that what Scott was saying, but I definitely would see a decrease for sure. Just a little, so that we know anyways, and I guess that the smart system might be the way to go, but there might be some incentives out there that people could do, whether we run them through us, you know, if you disconnect and you go on to a fertilization well there, then, you know, you get a rebate back or something to that effect. There is some firms out there that might be worth trying to look into a little bit. I could ask someone to look into on something like that. And with our Water Management Act, we have to sign basically saying if we get into a drought situation, these sprinkler systems are only going to be able to do odd even or not at all. And it all goes off of a well. It might be, I think our well's in Sandwich. It might be in Brewster. There's a couple different wells that they test that if it drops to a certain point, we have to put in certain regulation changes. And at that point, do we become the police and run around and see who's running at that point at 5 o'clock in the morning? Who gets up early and checks to see who's running and all? So it's, I'm kind of going off here. To go back to your original question, yes, I think it would work. Tom, sorry.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate your insight. I guess a little concern that if we were to kick people off of irrigation water, then they're going to put in their own wells and potentially pump even more than they are now, which would draw the water down, the water table down quicker. And that's something that I don't think we want to do. And I don't know if that's true. I mean, when they put in their own well, do they get a permit from DEP that says they can only pump so much? And they are then controlled by the same constraints that we are with respect to those monitoring wells?
I don't think there's any state permit required, Tom. I believe the town of Barnstable may permit irrigation wells. I think there might be a Board of Health regulation, but I don't think it limits the pumping. And it's a good point, although my sense is that the reason we're seeing the drawdowns and the problems is because of the proximity of the well field to the river.
Yeah.
And if you have the same amount of pumping, but you spread it out over the whole district, I think you're going to see a much less of a drawdown effect because it's spread out. It would depend where the wells are. If the big users are right on the river too, that could be a problem. You're right. But if they're not in close proximity to the river, then they may not have as much of an effect. So I think there's a benefit there, but you're right. There's certainly a counter.
This is probably a good intern study to take Jen's list of big volume users and put them on a map. And if they happen to be down along the shore in Ocean View or Oregon, they may not be affecting
the
wetlands as much as if they were in the interior of the town, right?
That was what I was thinking. A lot of these big users, again, I'm just guessing, are along the shoreline. I'm guessing and I'm generalizing, but I think I'm right. And those would probably not have the effect on the river.
I would ask if there's any public comment. This is not a hearing. This is just an informational session. But if anybody would like to comment or ask a question, I'd take that now. Carol.
Hi. Thank you for having second public comment. Having come from Sudbury, where I went through a process with the water there when we lived there for putting in irrigation regulations. And the first one they did was you had to have a private well. And I don't know about the existing systems ones, but they definitely put that one in, and I think it's a great idea. And also directed, I like the conversation you had about directed conversations or mailing or education or whatever to the higher users. That would be great, because hold our hand along the way to get there would be wonderful versus each individual homeowner having to reinvent the wheel on how to get off of the public water.
Anybody else?
Yes, Jim Danhauser. I do think that it will be important to have an educational component to any of these efforts on a broader basis than just at a water commissioner's meeting.
Absolutely. Jen, I'd ask you if some of the calls you've gotten from the major users have, I guess, is there a correlation in your mind of the major users with the high bills and irrigation? Have they talked about irrigation when they complain? Do they admit that they have an irrigation?
Oh, yeah, and I do have an info field in our database where if they tell me they have one, I'm marking that off. I'll be able to run queries on that field to know who in the district has said that they have one. I do think the rate increase that we implemented is going to do two things. Specifically, people are now paying attention to how much they use, where they might not have looked at that before, and they are actively checking for leaks in their irrigation system, and this may prompt some, at least for the short term, some reaction to make sure that their system is running properly, that they aren't missing heads, that there aren't leaks. I've told them all how to look at their meter, how to look at what they're using. So I do think that will help bring the consumption number down a little bit, but also we're reading meters twice a year now, and if there is a leak, we're going to identify them more quickly than we would have before. We're not reading every month, but we're reading twice a year, which will help.
Great, thank you. So, Scott, if I just might suggest, what I'm hearing is some consensus about the transition period. I don't think there's any reason to wait. We're not going to do it tonight, but in the near future to prevent any new systems. I think that that's irrespective of the rates or anything else. That's just good policy. And the encouragement of water-saving devices for those systems, that could be implemented very soon, too, I would think. But we do want some more public comment on it. And so, you know, maybe even our very first in-person meeting again, we could have it more of a public hearing.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of regulations we're required to do for public hearings. We obviously want to do it because it's good government. But I think that's, you know, we try to get the word out more, maybe have an education session and then a public hearing and then adopt the regulation. And maybe defer the removal of existing systems until we get a couple years under our belt.
Just a couple thoughts. Thanks for those comments, all good comments. Jim, I guess the question for you, you're the logical source here in terms of trying to get the word out. I'd be happy to work with you if there's a way to do something either in the newsletter or I don't know if you're doing Civic Association meetings by Zoom or what you're doing, but if there's a way to work through your channels to try to get some of this done, I'm happy to work with you. And then the second comment is it would be pretty easy to put aside that one provision about the 2023 requirement sunset moving systems out and go ahead with the regulation on the two provisions that seems like most people are supportive of. I didn't mention when I spoke to the irrigation people, and I don't remember the numbers, but they did indicate that there are quite a few systems going in, new systems going in every year. That apparently this is pretty popular to put for people, not only new homes, but, you know, people just upgrading their properties. They seem to think there are quite a few of these going in. So putting a stop to that would probably be helpful.
We talked about the golf course at one time.
Yeah.
What about the Kettleers Field? Are they on the system?
I have no idea.
I believe they are. The Kettleers have their own irrigation system over there.
System or well?
Well, they have a well.
They have a well?
They used to, at least. I don't know if they still do. They're not that high of uses, if I remember right. I believe they do have their own.
Scott, it's Jim Danhauser. We'd be happy to try to help in any process that you want to undertake. We're not currently having any Freedom Hall meetings, obviously,
yeah.
And we have not tried to do any association public meetings by Zoom yet, but if we continue to see the calendar fly by, we'll probably try to undertake one. We have also not been issuing the currents because
that's mostly intended to be something that communicates a calendar of events. And since there ain't no events, there ain't no calendar. That said, I've been toying with the idea of trying to put something together by way of occurrence, just to give people, you know, we do now have these calls every week on Monday. Make sure people have that information, provide some additional information for them. And if we do proceed to do that, then we'd certainly want to include stuff about what's going on with the Water Commissioner's consideration of these issues.
Let me just say for the record that if we hold the 4th of July parade on Zoom, I'm leaving town.
Is that a threat or a promise?
Mark?
Fran?
Yes. Can I just make a comment?
Sure. Please.
I just think the only problem I see with this is how are you going to know when somebody is putting in a new irrigation system?
Well, we'll at least see it when we read their meter and there's a huge jump in their consumption. But prior to that,
yeah,
I don't know.
Because there are no permits required by the town to for an irrigation system. So that's just, you know.
Did we find that out for sure? I know we had that question previously.
The town.
I have an irrigation system. I didn't require any permits to do it.
Chris, at what point do you get contacted for a new connection? Is it before the house is constructed? And I'm wondering if that would be a point where you could inform these people of the regulation.
Yeah, we could always put it into a if this comes into effect, we can put it down on the information sheet for applications.
When somebody applies to the town for a building permit and a water connection,
yeah, well,
somehow you have to sign off on it, right?
Somebody would apply to the town of Barnstable for a building permit and to the village of Kachewitt for water. That's a huge confusion to a lot of people around it, trying to find the local the difference between the Barnstable and Kachewitt, everything. Yeah.
Fran makes a good point, but my sense is that probably if we were to coordinate this with the building department and your sign-off on a new water connection, seems to me that's a pretty good point at which we could inform them that...
Not seeing many new houses, though. We're seeing rebuilds of houses that already have a water connection, right?
Right. It would have to be on a replacement service or something like that even also. But they don't have to do an application. All they have to do is get a price on a replacement service. They already have an account, so it would just be updating. I'm a little – I don't know for sure, but usually anything that is attached to the plumbing system in a house needs a plumbing permit. So I guess I'm not doubting Fran here. I'd just like to check with a couple of the local irrigation people to find out if they ever have to pull to connect to the water system, to the personal plumbing.
Interesting.
I think we've come around on this then. I think you have some more comments, Scott, to work with. And the water advisory, just the little advisory with the pictures of Little River, I think that is something that we could post on our website now. I'd added some photos to it.
Is there a photo credit on that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Did you get the chance to read it, Tom?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe at our next meeting we could vote at least that. It's just talking about the effect of irrigation on drawdown and whatnot.
Oh, is that what Scott shared at the last meeting?
Yeah.
I read that. Yeah. Yeah,
could we vote to approve that and put it on the website?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'd make a motion. So moved.
Okay. Is there a second? Scott?
Second.
All those in favor of approving the water advisory regarding irrigation, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. And so, Jen, you could post that up. I sent you a revised version with some more photos on it. But.
And I have just one other thought on the irrigation policy. It's just related. If someone that was a large water user didn't want to put their own well in, maybe they have a vernal pool in their yard and they don't want to drain that, right, draw that down, could we offer as an alternative that they get a irrigation meter, irrigation water meter. So they have a second meter at their house that the rates are exceptionally high or higher for. Could we do that? Just as an option, just as something else we might want to consider.
I've never heard of it, but I could look into it, see if anybody has heard of that. I'm sure there's places that have, especially if they're in a conservation area or low flow. Right. As you were saying, besides a vernal pool, a lot of these people are on the salt water. You know, they don't want to put salt water on their ground. If you get brackish water, you know, pumping straight out of the ground.
Right.
Okay. Stuff like that. So you have to go pretty deep to get fresh water if you're right on top of the ocean like that.
Okay. Yeah, just something else. Thanks.
Okay. We have somebody had to leave. Was you, Tom?
I'm waiting for a call. My people just left. They're going to be 15, 20 minutes, and then they're going to be back, and I need to meet them when they get back.
Okay. In the next 15 minutes, what I'd like to do is to go through the general guidelines. We've postponed this for a long time, but and again, I don't have them here in front of me. I don't have a printer.
I've got some.
Okay. Let's just explain what those are. That's a very historical document of this department. It includes, I think, a summary of all the different policies and guidelines that have been adopted over the various years. It's sort of grown organically. Is that true, Chris?
Yeah, as things have been done throughout the years, yes.
So the idea was to first of all, put it into a Word document instead of a typewriter where it had sat for many years. And so Jen's accomplished that. So now we can edit it a little more easily. I went through it just for grammar and whatnot. And I don't know if the other commissioners had a chance to think about any changes they would like to see in the guidelines.
I had one point, and it's related to number 4 under water usage.
Read it to us.
And Jen had put some red print in there that I recommend, including a service fee covering water department expenses, including wages and postage associated with past due accounts. So number 4 deals with lien notices and us doing work for people that haven't paid their bills. Number 3 also addresses that by describing that bills outstanding after 60 days will be subject to a one-time assessment, current late payment penalty as a percent of the outstanding balance. So I just didn't know if we should either in 3 or 4 put in a fee that would cover our indirect processing fees incurred by the district. And I was thinking like $30 or something, and that would cover registered mail, it would cover Jen's time. And so that's just one point I had.
And that's for overdue bills, any overdue bill that's more than 60 days?
Yeah, where the bills, where the ratepayers going into the lien process.
That would be 360 days for the lien letter. Is that what you're talking for?
Yeah, so it's 60 days for the outstanding bills, right? And that's an assessment fee. And then number 4 is for, the 360 days. You're right.
Yes.
So the preparation of the lien itself, is that what we're talking about? Are those prepared by the staff or by the council?
So once an account is 360 days past due, I start with telephone calls to try and knock the list down a little bit, and then we send 2 rounds of certified letters per our council's instruction. And then if they fail to pay within that time, at your August meeting is when I provide you the final list of what will be submitted to the town. And I think that's where Tom's talking about, including the additional assessment fee for the 2 rounds of certified postage and the labor associated with the lien process.
Right. Well, I know any certified letter is at least $8 nowadays. So there's two of them, that's 16.
Six and change, because we do it electronically.
Okay. Well, that sounds...
How much time do you think you spend, Jen?